Astonishing Legends is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies.
The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Potential savings will vary.
Not available in all states.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the #1 dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Camden High Street Haunting.
You know, man, there is something about London that feels layered, which, truth be told, you really need layers in London. It's at least certain times of year because there's sort of a wet, damp coldness to the wind there that cuts through to your bones when you're walking around in the cold months. But for real, you've got the modern glass of the Shard, which I'm pretty sure the locals make fun of, the tourist trap of the Eye on the Thames. But then you turn a corner in Camden and you're walking on top of 3 different centuries of dirt and ghosts from the past. And you can still feel it. You can feel it there.
I like that. Dirt and ghosts. It reminds me of Homer Simpson and the Mr. Sparkle Japanese commercial where they say he will banish dirt to the land of wind and ghosts. So there's always a land with that kind of stuff. And certainly London and this neighborhood of London is no doubt rife with all that kind of stuff. And you're right. I think layers of humanity living over each other throughout the centuries.
Yeah.
But there you go. It's the old smoke of London. It's thick. It reminds me of San Francisco. There you go. We talked about that just previously here when the fog rolls in and it's just a biting cold. So it's a very mood evocative story we have here. And just for a bit of geography for folks who haven't had a chance to go there yet, if you head about 2 miles due north of the West End, I realize that my explanation here is not going to mean much if you haven't been there or know London. But if you've heard of these names, you hit the Regent's Canal and then the heart of Camden nearby. It started as a 1790s residential project that evolved into a massive industrial transport hub. But by the 1970s, well, you see what I did there. And that's not me. I usually, for real, I transpose numbers a lot. And I write them down and how I say them.
It's on purpose here.
So here we go. 1790s to the 1970s.
That's like an anagram of the year. That doesn't seem like much, folks, but 1790 to 1970, that's 180 years.
Yes. And any UK person will say that is nothing. But here, that's something. True. Yeah. 180 years. It's respectable.
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine in those 2 centuries, just the crumbling Victorian stables and warehouses in Camden here. And then having it become the literal birthplace of the British punk movement.
Yes.
And also the legendary Camden Market.
Yeah, it's got that punk energy. It's got that counterculture grit. It's now a place where people go to lose themselves, which makes it the perfect place for something else to find you. And frankly, I'm not sure what would be cooler than being a punk ghost in London.
Maybe, I think that'd be pretty awesome. Maybe a living London punk. But
yeah.
That brings us to tonight's dead letter, which comes to us from Shane, who took a trip to London back in 2010. This is a story that I guess you could say checks a lot of boxes for us as far as the setup and some curious twists as well, because you have the skeptical brother, you have the late night hotel atmosphere, which I could just feel it as well. And
yes,
it reminds me of the stories from Stephen King and late night hotels and all that. And then you have the strange bridge between the mundane and the seemingly impossible that we often seem to cross over and over here in the Dead Letter Office.
It's a classic setup, a night of delivery pizza, couch potato TV, and then the vibe changes. It's that reality of experience versus the experience of reality. Shane knows his own mind and he knows what he saw. One thing we've learned a long time ago at Astonishing Legends is never tell people what they saw.
Hello, Astonishing Legends team. Longtime listener here, but this is my first time sharing. I hope you'll find this as interesting as I did when it happened. My name is Shane Crombie. I'm 34 years old, and this experience took place sometime in 2010, so I would have been 19 years old at the time. My brother and I were visiting London from Ireland because I was interested in the history of Camden as a focal point for punk and counterculture music and fashion in the 70s. And despite having been born and raised in Manchester for most of my life at that time, neither one of us had ever visited our homeland's capital. I wish I could remember the name of the hotel we stayed in because I'm morbidly curious to go back there and see if lightning will strike twice. We had already been in London for a couple of days, and this particular night we retired and just wanted to chill out in the hotel for the evening. We ordered Domino's pizza, pulled the couch over from underneath the window to watch the TV, and watch the X Factor finals. When it started to get late, we pushed the couch back under the window and retired to our beds on the opposite side of the room, somewhat disrupted by the noise of children laughing and shouting, running up and down the hallway outside our room. My brother has always been quick to sleep and managed to doze off without much trouble. But at this stage of my life, I was dealing with depression and frankly not getting a lot of sleep. Most nights I would sit in my bed, awake, playing solitaire on my iPod, sometimes until the sun would come back up before I'd actually turn into sleep for a few hours. Admittedly, this is the detail of the story that skeptics I tell like to latch onto as a way to dismiss what I believe wholeheartedly I saw in the room that night. Especially when I tell them I've also experienced sleep paralysis accompanied by visual and auditory hallucinations fairly regularly throughout my life. However, it's this history with sleep paralysis that makes me confident I know the difference between what's real and what's a dream, when I'm asleep or when I'm awake. I've long had an interest in the supernatural slash paranormal, but this was the first and only time in my life that I had experienced something that I genuinely couldn't explain away with anything logical or mundane. So that night in bed, as usual, I'm playing solitaire into the small hours of the morning. Eventually, I decided although I'm not particularly sleepy, I should get some rest as we had another long day of activity ahead. I switch off my iPod and with it, my only light source in the room. It takes a minute for my eyes to adjust to the darkness and something catches my eye at the end of my bed. Or rather, my eyes are struggling to catch something at the end of my bed. I try my best to focus my vision and get a clear look, but it proves difficult as the woman standing at the foot of my bed with her back towards me and hair so long I can't see where it stops over the edge of the bed seems to be somewhat translucent and impossible to truly focus on. No matter how hard I tried or how long I waited, my eyes were not capable of looking at her. but only through her. My own reaction surprised me, as I always expected that if I saw something like this, it would frighten me immensely. But for some reason, I felt absolutely zero fear looking at this unexplainable sight. More than anything, I just felt a sense of bewildered curiosity as I tried to wrap my head around what I was seeing. I thought maybe my eyes were playing tricks on me, so I looked around the room, thinking it must be because I had been looking at a bright screen for a while and what I was seeing was just overlaid on my vision and would follow my eyes wherever I looked and disappear gradually. But despite looking around the room, she stayed right where she was, perfectly still, like a snapshot in time. More intriguingly, it took me a minute to notice, but there appeared to also be a man sitting on the couch under the window, looking straight ahead, perfectly still, to where my brother was sleeping and happily snoring away. But again, the sight didn't frighten me at all. I sat on my bed looking back and forth at these two figures and around the room for anything else unusual for at least 10 to 15 minutes, and neither of them moved an inch or lost any of the little physical clarity they had to begin with. I couldn't stay awake forever, though, so eventually decided to crawl down towards the woman to put my iPod in my bag, curious as well to see what would happen, if anything, as I approached. As I did, though, the woman simply seemed to fade away the closer I got, and I went back to the head of my bed with a lot on my mind as I tried to go to sleep. The next morning, my brother and I were walking down the main street in Camden looking for something to eat. I wasn't sure if I should say anything about what I saw in case I sounded crazy, but curiosity would get the better of me. I chose my words carefully so as not to risk planting any specific ideas in my brother's head and simply asked him, "Did you see anything strange last night?" My brother's reply was a little bit of a surprise, but very much a welcome one. He said he saw a woman standing at the end of my bed with long hair, but didn't want to say anything to freak me out. He hadn't seen the man on the couch, but confirmation of one of the figures was good enough for me. I'm so glad he told me when I asked, as I'm completely sure now of what I saw, of what we both saw. Finally, maybe it's not related or relevant, but in hindsight, we didn't see any children in the hotel either for the duration of our stay, or when we stepped out into the hall to see what all the noise was about. Were they also there, but not really there? That one I can't say, but I do like the mystery. I hope you found this one interesting, and I'd love to hear your thoughts.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break here and switch gears for a second.
Oh, you want to talk about something more grounded? Are you one of those people that actually likes your money?
I am, yeah.
Well, that's good to hear, because unfortunately, traditional big wireless carriers, and hard to believe we still have to talk about these guys, but they like your money too.
Indeed, they do. You know, we've both been with Mint Mobile for years and years now. We once did the math, and between my whole family being with them and then Forrest too, we have collectively saved thousands of dollars since we made the switch. Mm-hmm. Thousands of dollars Big Wireless would have loved to have. But instead, my family got to use it on more important things. Yeah. If you're tired of spending hundreds on crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and free perks that cost you more in the long run, then a premium wireless plan from Mint Mobile for $15 a month might be right for you.
Yeah, it's time to stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been, because it doesn't have to be that way and you don't have to. Mint exists purely to fix that, and they're here to rescue you with plans starting at just $15 a month.
I use Mint Mobile every day and I love it. The quality of the service is great. There's high-speed data and unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and just start saving immediately. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month.
No long-term contracts, no hassle. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you.
Shop plans at mintmobile.com/DLO. That's mintmobile.com/DLO.
Upfront payment of $45 for a 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Now, let's get back to Shane's story.
So what's great about this to me is, like, I've been to London only once. I loved it. It was amazing. I was just there for like 10 days, had a great time. And I'm an Anglophile, really. I just love going over there. Mm. And having lived in New York for several years, I found London to be a very refreshing, similar but different vibe, which was pretty awesome. Also incredibly expensive. I'd never be able to afford to live there, but, you know, couldn't really afford New York. So like the whole thing, all of that stuff. But what's interesting to me too, is about Shane and his brother being over there. And it's like, even though they're like, oh, they're in a fun alternate location and it's different from most of the things we know, but still they're just trying to have a couch potato moment in a hotel room after kind of a day of doing whatever. And this is still happening. This strange appearance of these ghosts. What's really wild to me about this story is how long they were present and how non-interactive they were. Because we've talked about this echoes and reflections and all of that. And what's going on here, it's not too different from our friend Marty, who we had on very, very early on Astonishing Legends, talking about the guy getting ready in the tuxedo behind him in the mirror when he and his wife stayed on the Queen Mary for a weekend.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Before we drill down on that, there is a similar scenario where it is a mundane activity. And I guess opposed to somebody doing a ghost hunt where you expect to see something and you got your gear out and your meters and your K2s and your REMs and this and that and your cat toys and something happening. And I've certainly had a fair number of friends who've gone on either the guided tour that the Queen Mary gives you and saw something, it paid off. And then people like our good friends, Tara and Natalie from Natalie and Tara Try Stuff, them having an experience where they purposely went to the Queen Mary. And I think it was Natalie who said she felt a spirit just move through her, a la Poltergeist. Very skeptical, neutral about all this stuff. She said, that definitely happened. I felt it, and it's like the movie. So in this case, you're not doing, as you said, anything to search out these spirits and maybe not even aware of them, much like our friend Marty, as you talked about. That was the Queen Mary episode that he was on with his wife, Alice, and also doing a mundane thing, getting dressed to go down to dinner and experiencing some kind of echo. And when we say that, we didn't know at the time, and I wasn't sure when he first told me the story of, like, you know, our knowledge or at least our vocabulary of how to categorize these experiences has expanded, no doubt. You know, he didn't know. He was asking me, like, what do you think that is? And it was after we interviewed them and got more detailed information, like, well, how did you feel about that? And he said, there wasn't any interaction. So just quickly, he was sitting on the edge of the bed in their hotel room, like I said, just kind of a pretty decent mood, but just kind of getting ready for dinner. He's sitting on the edge of the bed, putting on his socks. And that's when he looks up and sees a reflection in the mirror of something standing on the other side of the bed from him. And this is the mirror that's on the back of the door to the bathroom. And the door is open. His wife is in there getting ready. And that's when he sees somebody standing there, clear as day. But as he said, if for those folks who haven't gone that far back into the catalog, and we certainly don't expect you to.
Yeah, this episode's 12 years old now, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's quite a that's quite a ways back. But he described the guy as looking at, like, the actor John Neville in the motion pictures, Baron Munchausen, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Oh, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Yes.
Terry Gilliam's. Very fun film. And just that kind of regal looking guy. And he said he was just kind of like also getting ready. But he never looked down. Like I said, this is the reflection. Same kind of reaction here where our author, Shane, this story is just kind of like intently staring at this thing. Mm-hmm. Our friend Marty saying he was getting a cramp in his neck just because he was so like, what is that? Just intently staring. And then not having any interaction. Not that that's a cue, but what this is sounding like is also some kind of echo or maybe a reflection of a past spirit there. So we're not, of course, we don't know. We weren't there. And I would defer to Shane and his brother how they felt. And also another tell is that they both felt very neutral about this.
Yeah, not scared.
Right.
Yeah, and to spend all this time with it. I mean, because the other thing is the first thing he saw sounds a lot like the freaking thing from The Ring with like long hair. You can't, and with its back to you. It's like, what's worse than a ghost standing at the foot of your bed staring at you?
Right.
One standing at the foot of your bed with its back to you. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you not even facing me?
Right, it's
you
the know? Anticipation of the face, or in some cases yeah. much worse, no face at all.
And maybe it was the front and its hair just was in front of its face.
Oh, you're going to go Ringu. You're going to go all ring on us. Well, perhaps, but it does speak to something. You know, again, I want to know, like, what is that? Did something happen in that room in the past? Or is it just they stayed there once? Or it's some kind of representational imprint? Much like, we'll just call him Baron Munchausen there in the room. You know, I doubt that guy died in the room or died standing while putting on his bow tie.
Right.
But somehow he left an impression that was able
to be maybe
viewed.
He died a natural death 1,000 miles away later. Like, you don't know, you know, like it doesn't necessarily, I mean, of course, you know, coming back to something we haven't mentioned in a long time on either show, the rules. What are the rules about which stage of your life does your ghost represent, and can it just show up wherever, show up a place that you liked, or is like in this kind of echo thing, you know, because we've talked about crisis apparitions that we, you know, we bring up a lot with Brandon Musullo had taught us about that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of people that are snatched off the earth suddenly and you see a replay of that moment over and over and over, or shortly after it or before it or something like that. But that kind of thing, and also this, whatever Shane and his brother were experiencing, there was not necessarily, wouldn't fall into the category of a crisis apparition, but what is going on? And also, the other thing is, with Shane, his brother saw the woman, but didn't see the other one. Only Shane saw the man.
Yeah, that's, again, another interesting aspect to the story, is that at least something was confirmed, and does it mean more verification or... does it add credibility to the story that he didn't see both? You know what I'm saying? In a weird way. In that there was a phenomenon there to be seen, but it wasn't the same between both of them. And why didn't he see the man sitting in the couch? So it's interesting in that, again, those are more rules. Is it just perspective, physical perspective and point of view from where his brother was in his bed?
Yeah.
What's going on there, or what made it the woman more visible to the other brother? So that's interesting. Yeah. But like I said, does that make it more credible in that, oh, well, you both saw the same thing and maybe, you know, you're not telling us, but you influenced each other, or you heard a tour guide or somebody tell you that story? And I love how Shane also realizes that most people who are trying to debunk this, that are people he knows, would say, oh, well, sleep paralysis. And I love the counterpoint in that. No, I've really experienced quite a bit of that, and I know the difference.
Yeah,
I know what sleep paralysis feels like. And so now you have both brothers at least confirming that it was not probably sleep paralysis, that it was something else going on. And so I would say also in a very localized way, because in the Queen Mary story, what was interesting, and there's more to it that they explain, but we've known Marty and Alice for a very long time, decades now, and one characteristic about Alice is that she has a lot of intuition. A
lot of stuff happens
She's very sensitive.
Yes.
Yeah, she's picked up on it and has a lot, very intuitive, and so she senses these things. And so one thing that I don't think she mentioned it at the time, and I neither did Marty, because, of course, they're about to go downstairs for a nice dinner, and they don't want to freak each other out. Plus, they had a night to spend there. So I think it was just on the drive home. And it was just kind of an odd, unsettling feeling. I think early that morning was, I think it was Cloggers were having some kind of convention above them, or his bagpipes. It was something disturbing. Yeah. It's like early in the morning. And they said, let's just get out of here. Then it was on the drive home where they started to discuss their experiences. And Brian told her about seeing this. And she goes, yeah, you know, that tracks, because all night, I didn't really sleep well. I kept having these very vivid dreams of like World War II planes dogfighting and planes crashing and going into the water and explosions and bullets. Yeah. And you know, she's not a huge World War II aficionado, as far as I know. And so she was picking up on something that may necessarily not have been part of Queen Mary's history or experience.
Well, no, I think, wasn't it for a moment, it was an evacuation or a hospital ship, wasn't it? I think it
was. Oh, it was. Yeah. No, no. Yeah. A lot of soldiers died on it.
Yeah.
Now, the Queen Mary, as they said, I believe one of the factoids is that it was fast enough to outrun the torpedoes. And right. So it came away unscathed, but certainly saw a little bit of action and certainly a lot of death in its time.
Yeah.
Wasn't the focus of a lot of World War II fighter plane dogfights overhead.
Yeah.
I don't recall that being part of its history, but was that passed down? Was there something there, something residual between coming from the, you know, unfortunate wounded and dying soldiers that were aboard it? You know, as part of their experience. So like, how does that all transfer? But getting back to this story, Shane knows the difference in what Shane is experiencing. And the brother, there's no mention of what their history is, but I presume they're having the same experience. So it's validated. Also, static. And so you see the figures there, but they're not moving. And then when you get close to it, it starts to evaporate.
Yeah.
So there's something about maybe the energy there and your energy that you're bringing to the room.
I feel like lately we've been invoking Haunted Mansion a lot with the Pepper's Ghost illusion. But But in the Haunted Mansion, they're animated. These are like freeze frames, it sounds like. They're kind of describing sort of a virtual freeze frame. That's also interesting because I don't recall a lot of stories from our back catalog where the ghost was frozen.
Well, again, I think Baron Munchausen was, as I remember Marty describing, was he was in motion. So
he was like, putting his clothes on. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like adjusting, you know, straightening up, adjusting his tie and this and that. I have heard of other things just kind of standing there and then evaporating. But yeah, again, who knows what these things are other than it seems to be established that there was something to look at there. And I like the description from Shane in that. No matter how hard they tried, their eyes were having a hard time focusing on it. Like it was hard to see. A little bit, perhaps, like the experience you get that it still amazes me, like of the magic eye posters, which you don't see a lot of these days. But
for
folks who don't know, when you look at it, it looks like a computer camouflage, right? Just shapes and blotches, squares of color. And then when you unfocus your eyes, there's a 3D image that's embedded with it. That's pretty magical to me, that there's information in there that you can't see unless your eyes are in a specific state. And it takes a while to get there. It's like juggling. Like
once you learn it, you can do it. But it is like, it's very much, And whenever I'm trying to do it, I always look like the big, dumb, bad guy alien in the Superman, you know, Zod's. Right. When he's trying to make lasers come out of his eyes. That's what I look like when I'm trying to do a magic guy.
That's right. Jaws. You have to be in a certain state. And maybe it is that kind of once it's quieted down, the lights are off and there's something there, but it's hard for your eyes to capture it, as they say. It was, or rather, my eyes were struggling to catch something at the end of the bed.
Yeah.
They tried their best to focus their vision, get a clear look, but it's kind of difficult because there's something misty about this, talking about the fog. We're talking about ghost fog here, where there's no definitive layer to for your eyes to land on. It's kind of like, remember the old SLRs and various digital cameras with the automatic lenses. It needs an object to be able to focus on. And when it's not working or the object is the subject of the photograph is moving, the camera lens is having a hard time, like zzz, 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 it's going back and forth because it can't grasp anything. So you have a little bit of that. But then I love the aspect that once they do, then it's there. And for such a long time, 10, 15, 20 minutes.
Right. And there's a couple of things I want to point out here for our listeners, too, that's interesting to me about this dead letter. One of the first ones is the, you know, we've already said this a few times, but Shane's brother also saw the woman with the long hair. That rules out a lot of the explanations that people go to who are trying to figure out the mundane.
Yeah.
And I'm not even going to say the word skeptic, but just like, oh, okay, well, whatever. Is it gas in the room? Is it infrasound? Is it, you know, which generally in terms of apparitions, infrasound gives you gray blobs at the edge of your vision for the most part. This is at the foot of the bed in front of Shane. But like, no matter what, if you're saying, okay, well, there's an outside influence here, and this is a biological side effect of that outside influence, there is no case where both people are going to experience the exact same biological side effect, where they see the same apparition. That just doesn't happen. So then the next thing is people go, oh, well, it's shared hallucination, it's mass hysteria, whatever. It's like, that doesn't work either because they didn't even talk about it till later. And this, again, harkens back to a story like one of our Astonishing Legends episodes, the Kakowski intruder, where siblings both saw the same thing and didn't really realize it till years later. And in this case, it's a lot sooner. But I do think that one thing that's really fascinating about this story is the sibling connection, which seems to come up a fair amount with the stories we get, where they both experience something. And a lot of times don't know that they both experienced it, which begs the question is like, well, what if it's some kind of screen memory? It's aliens. It's, you know, whatever. Like, why is it able to get a hold of the senses of both these people? Is there a genetic reason for that, or a spiritually genetic reason that with their family or their history or just who they are? I think all of that is really interesting, but the fact that they both saw the same thing, at least with the one of these two characters, rules out those explanations of an environmental contaminant causing the problem, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about that just now, about the effect you have, not only as an observer, and I think that has something to do with consciousness, but also your physical presence. It's kind of like seeing the reflection on, let's say, water or a pool or a lake, and then you get in the water and you cause ripples and you cause the thing to dissipate. And so the closer they got, the action was to dissipate this energy or disrupt it.
Right.
Or is it something where, again, you're not supposed to fully interact with it? There's some rule there in the supernatural world that there's only certain things you can do and certain amounts of interaction, and there are limits. But also the hearing of the children playing in the hall is interesting because, again, I would have loved if it was, again, the duration between, you know, you're hearing children run up and down the hall, and then maybe, you know, you don't immediately look out the door to see who it is, and they're not there. And so it leaves some doubt in your mind. Like I said, it's like you never saw any children in the rest of the stay. You didn't really see any children when that was happening. But it reminds me of this is in Spain, I think, one of my favorite stories, which is kind of passed off. But it's I took a college course about surrealistic filmmaker and icon Luis Buñuel.
Oh, yeah.
And
on Chenin de Lou. Right?
That's right. Yeah. In his early days, yes, with his buddy Salvador Dali. But he talked about, it was just kind of an anecdote. And I think he was talking about the mystery of life, but not really buying into one thing or the other, just that, you know, strange things happen and they're notable. With the examined life, the person that enriches their life and their outlook and their experience is paying attention to these things. He was, some friends were coming back from a late dinner at a restaurant. They're walking in town and everything's closed for the most part, but they're approaching an elementary school and they see the lights are on and they can hear children laughing and playing in the classroom. They just all turn to each other like, it's past 10 o'clock. That's really weird. Who's letting these kids play around in the classroom?
Right.
And there's a lot of commotion and the lights again are on in the classroom. And as they walked up to look in the window to see what was going on, the lights shut off.
Right.
But they could still see inside and there was no one in there. So there's something about the energy and the playfulness and the joie de vivre and bon vivantiness of kids. You know, the energy and that kind of youthful energy also lingers as well in a lighthearted way until you look down the hallway or you look in the classroom and they're not there. Then, like, what's going on? I don't think all those children expired in some kind of sad and mass expiration. It's just the energy, that kind of echo of something, of years and years of classes of that same grade of young little kids having fun and playing in the classroom and causing a ruckus. There's something about that energy and just kids running up and down the hall. How many years has that gone on?
I distinctly heard a ruckus in here.
Yeah.
The principal from the Breakfast Club, Paul Gleason, God rest his soul.
He's terrific. Yes.
Love that guy. Yeah. Also in Trading Places. He's the heavy in Trading Places.
That's right. So, again, I would venture to say, well, it depends. Like, look, there's a great clip that's floating around Instagram right now. I'm sure many folks have seen it, but it's a janitor taking cell phone video overnight during his night shift of cleaning up. The kids had an earlier celebration that day with a lot of balloons, and he's cleaning up the little party they had, and he says he's creeped out because one red balloon seems to be following him, and it doesn't seem to be air currents. And here's the thing I didn't notice. It's like, okay, it's late night. You're kind of scrolling through. Oh, that's creepy. That's kind of cool. It seems to be following him like out the door of the classroom and into the hallway. He's like, nope, can't deal with that.
Yeah.
And as he's looking at it down the hallway, you see a shadow figure zip past the open end of the hallway, like another T section of the hallway.
Yes, I've seen this video. Yeah.
And that's where he's like, okay, we're done here. My point being is that I think mentioned earlier at the beginning of the clip was that school was built over a burial ground.
Oh, like of course.
Like an old cemetery.
Ye old trope, yes.
Well, yes, the old trope, but like, does that, you know, obviously, does that have something to do with this? And it's like, I don't know what the ground is over. We're talking about different types of residual hauntings here, you could say.
Yeah, sure.
And so the hotel, it's like I said, I didn't seem to be anything tragic with these folks, but who knows?
No, and I wish, like he said, Shane said he couldn't remember the name of it. I wish we could have looked further into it. Right. You know, I mean, and that's one of the things that comes up on the show a lot. We're always like, well, you know, the ghost doesn't have to originate in the building that's on the land. We've heard on our show over the years, it's the land, not the buildings. It's the,
right.
You know, but then, you know, what are the rules? Can this ghost appear here that never set foot in this area? And, or at what stage in their life, like we were talking about earlier, but. There's a lot of creepy stuff that they weren't creeped out. That's the other thing that freaks me out. Is how is this not scary? They're frozen. Their back is to you. Right. Like all of these things, I'm just like, nope, I'm out of here. That's like, I'm not into this at all. But they were relaxed.
It's fascinating because, and maybe, again, massive speculation here, but maybe you're not feeling anything because there is no spirit juice there. There's no zhuzh.
Right.
There's no mojo there because you're seeing just a reflection and it's fascinating. You're paying attention, but you're just seeing an image in a way that's also internally kind of neutral. So when we're talking about the other things, like with the balloon, that's pretty interactive. Like whatever's he's getting this right. Well, first of all, it's weird. Now, if you didn't believe in any of that stuff at all, it's like, okay, there's weird air currents. I'm sure people could try to debunk this saying like, well, you're moving away from it. You're bringing air currents. And so the balloon's coming with
electricity.
You.
Electricity.
Yeah, there's something there. However, there's other balloons there that don't do the same thing. It's just that one red balloon. And you're doing it, you know, all the way out the door into the hallway, perhaps. But again, you would think you would see some other air disturbance with the other balloons. So my point being is that that's much more interactive. That has a visceral feeling. We talk about all these other experiences that people have, and there's definitely, when there seems to be a more interactive experience, there is a more visceral feeling inside. People, they know good or bad. Getting back to the Queen Mary, that's one of my favorite stories. I think it was in a Jim Harold's campfire of a guy being really annoyed and perturbed because he's on the ghost tour on the Queen Mary. And there are some drunk folks that are kind of yakking it up, making fun of the tour guide and, you know, being very disrespectful. And there was a woman there with her husband, and he was just getting, she's like, they're cackling so much. I can't hear the tour guide. I can't hear the woman. And I'm really interested in this. And he was just getting more and more agitated. Then he felt this hand on his shoulder.
Right.
And he said, I instantly just relaxed. Like, I just like the hand was saying, I know we get this every tour. It's after cocktail hour. These people are drunk. Don't worry about it. And he just felt instantly relaxed and like, okay. I mean, still annoyed, but like just his tension and his anger went away. So it's a very interactive thing in a converted hotel. So here you're not getting any kind of feeling, but it's just very neutral, which is fascinating too. And I would imagine same for the brother, although Shane never tells us what the brother felt anything. It was also just like, no, I did see that and I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is I guess it depends on your relationship with your siblings, but not wanting to sound crazy with somebody as close as a brother or sister. And I don't know if you felt that. I mean, are there people that you would or would not tell within your family?
No, because my family knows what I do for a living.
Well, so before all that, I'm saying, you know, as you're growing up, were your family open about sharing these kinds of things?
Yes. Yeah, my family is. Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did anybody have? I never really asked too much. Well, I do know your cousin.
My one cousin who I was talking to today, actually, he had some strange experiences in a house he used to live in, for sure.
Right.
And he got pretty wigged out about it.
Yeah. So, well, that was much
I don't think anything's happened since then. I mean, I've seen him 1,000 times since we haven't, nothing else has been mentioned, but it was enough. Like, I never really knew what his belief system was until that happened to him. Oh. And he was like, he was very much of a no thank you kind of person.
Yes. So, well, listen, that was much more intrusive and scary, shall we say. I think at the time it was footsteps coming like up the stairs and down the hallway to the upstairs bedroom where it's like, okay, now that's a threat.
Yeah, that's a threat.
And here's where it's ironic to me is that if it's a ghost and you're okay with ghosts, like, no, listen, I don't mind ghosts at all, really. I just don't want them in my house because it is like, if I'm alone, I want to make sure I'm alone.
right.
Or I'm visiting my folks and I know who's all here. You just want to keep a count of everybody that's supposed to be there. It's like if your friend was just standing in the corner of your bedroom. It's like, okay, we're going to go to sleep now. So you need to get into the guest room.
Yeah.
I love you, brother, but we just don't want you standing there watching us.
Yep, that's okay? Right. That's right.
And that's somebody you know. So that's much more of an interactive, even though it was just audio, auditory, hearing the footsteps, like, okay, if you believe in ghosts, that's disturbing, but at least you're probably going to be okay. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
If it's mundane and it's an intruder, a human intruder with bad intentions, and you know why wouldn't they be? They're in your house. That's much more of an immediate terrorizing threat. And so you have to handle that. So, but I'm just curious to go back to this and just how people, even close ones, family members, and how they want to be perceived and sharing things. And I think there's different levels of that. I think with the Kakowski intruder, which you mentioned, I don't think there's anything like, oh, they're going to think I'm crazy if I mention this. It just was never mentioned.
Like, it just didn't come up until they were all out one night years later talking about stuff like that.
Yeah, so, fully open to that. And I said that, you know, the youngest sibling who lived out at the end of the hall never experienced anything.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, that's that other layer of who's going to see what, even though there is something here to experience. We're experiencing slightly different levels of it, you could say, and some not at all.
Well, Shane, hearing about your night and that with your brother in that Camden Hotel really stuck with us. It's one thing to see something strange and write it off as tired travel brain or a familiar bout of sleep paralysis, but you trusted your gut. You knew what a trick of the mind felt like, and you knew this wasn't it. The fact that your brother saw the exact same woman at the foot of your bed turns this from a spooky anecdote into a genuine mystery. Makes you wonder about the nature of places like Camden, cities built on top of centuries of history, because sometimes it feels like the past is still right there in the room with us. And every now and then, two people happen to tune into the exact same frequency, like Forrest just said. Whether it was a temporary glitch in reality or just two figures from another time sharing your space for the night, it's an incredible experience that challenges how we process the world around us here at the Dead Letter Office. Thank you so much for sending your story in to us, and we will see you next week.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolton. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
My perfect day has sand, salt, water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
What if you could get more from what you already do? When you're a Shell Fuel Rewards member, you can. When you join, you'll save 10 cents per gallon on your first fill, 20 cents per gallon on your second, 30 cents per gallon on your third, and more savings on every fill after that. Join the Shell Fuel Rewards program in the Shell app and enjoy life with more. Your nearest Shell station is closer than you think.
Listener. Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.